You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't even care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe to Euro thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
Cheated
I'm
a little bit. Yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, from San Jose, California. Yeah, a little bit of a change up there for you. We are on site here at the MLS All-Star Game on Extra Time Radio. I am, of course, Andrew Wiebe. David Goss, not here yet. He's going to be the voice of the MLS homegrown game, the Chipotle homegrown game. So tune into that on Wednesday. But we are here. We're working from San Pedro Public Market. This is for you. This is like Brooklyn. You feel right at home. The exposed brick, everything's great. This is Kalen Carr with me. It's just us two. It feels nice. Feels cozy.
It does. It's such an honor to be with you. And just to hear you start to say the New York thing, it just makes me feel good. That's like, can I get that a ringtone from you?
I could actually do that for you. We might be able to put that out for public download if you want to, you know, have that for like your answering machine or
free
something else. Free of charge.
Oh.
Yeah. You got to create the market before you monetize it. So I'm just trying to get that rolling.
Be careful what they say, giving anything away free these days.
I know. Thank you for listening here. It's an extra special show. As I said, we are in San Jose ahead of the big game on Thursday, 7:30 p.m. One second. ESPN, Unimas, UDN, RDS, and TSN2. That's where you can watch it. All the coverage, of course, right here at MLSsoccer.com.
Wait, I want to get a plug in, though.
Go. Plug away.
If you want to follow Andrew Wiebe's exploits throughout the week of San Jose,
no.
Follow me on Snapchat at KalenCar3. I will be snapping all of Wiebe in slow motion, no less. It's going to be exciting.
Slow motion for you, as a famous person once said in a song.
And I'm also introducing Flo Rida tonight.
Mr. Rida.
This is a lifelong dream
for me. Yes, Mr.
Rida. I really want to get to the bottom of how he chose his name. I know he's from Florida.
As Flo. From Florida, Flo Rida. That's what I'm
guessing. I just want to dig a little deeper, see if there's something
more. For
sure.
Oh, I understand that. Monday night, that free stream, Flo Rida, Bellanova, right. You can watch it, MLSsoccer.com, 10 p.m. Eastern. You just got to register for that one. Pretty easy to do. We'll talk about the All-Star Game for just a second here, and then we'll get into the weekend because it was a busy one. There's a lot to talk about from MLS between the New York Derby, between Seattle just coming under the gun in Kansas City. Bruce Arena had some funny comments that everybody will certainly enjoy those. But some news for you here. Per Mertesacker is out for Arsenal. He had a knee injury. He pulled out, not coming to the U.S. with that squad. I believe he was just named captain, so they're missing him. We'll see who wears the armband. On the other side, another central defender, Matt Beisler, he's also out. He's got a knee injury. They're going to let that thing heal in Kansas City, make sure he's good for the playoff push, the second half of the season. And as I said, the homegrown game gets us going on Wednesday between these two games. It's at 9 p.m. Eastern, watch free on MLSsoccer.com. Let's talk about All-Star games, though.
Yeah.
Player perspective. What are you thinking? What are the guys that aren't here thinking? The guys are at home, and I'm not saying that because you didn't make an All-Star team. I'm just you have some experience. I'm trying to draw.
Yeah. No, this is my first All-Star game.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. First time being here. I'm actually really excited. I was saying I really hope that this develops into something where players come to it who aren't involved in the game.
But don't they want rest? Don't you want to just, like, hang out at home? Maybe.
Yeah, it is now. But if we can,
are you training during it?
There is. Sometimes there's training. Yeah, it depends on the team. It depends on the schedule. There's not a lot of time off. I'd like to see the schedule worked out to be able to afford for a little more time for these guys to rest, but also to be able to come here. I think you could look at NBA All-Star Weekend. I was at one in Houston, and the whole league shows up.
Right.
I think guys feel weird about coming out to the All-Star game when they're not involved.
It's like touching a trophy you haven't won, maybe?
It shouldn't be that way. It should be a fun experience for guys to be able to come. There's a lot of events going around the thing, you know. Just going to MLS Cups, I always heard there were parties around it.
Yeah.
I never got to go, obviously, because we're playing in the game. So All-Star is a good chance.
Oh, so you slipped that one in well, yeah.
Yeah, losing games. Uh-huh,
yeah. Hey, you're still playing in them.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. But I'm really excited for the week. I think it's going to be a pretty fun one. And for people who say that it doesn't matter, for the players, to me it matters. I would love to have made it to an All-Star team. I'm sure a lot of guys would like that as well. It is an honor. You want to be recognized. And there's also some money involved.
There is. That's important.
Yeah.
Bonuses come into these things.
That's a nice off-season trip.
Does it matter how the All-Stars do against Arsenal?
I don't read too much into that, to be honest.
We don't want like a Man U-esque. I remember in Houston, many years back, there was a – it was a – it was not a good result
for
the All-Stars.
Yeah, it should be, you know, I don't think you can read to say MLS is far behind because we've lost this game, or MLS is far ahead because look at the—it's not a team. These are guys just thrown together. Arsenal's in preseason. It's a spectacle. It's exciting. You should enjoy it. I think it's—I want it to be competitive enough to where guys want to put on a show.
Right.
But I'm not going to read too much into the result.
I'm 100% down with like the NBA All-Star format where nobody plays defense. Like, yeah, look, let's play some. Let's try. I want to see goals. I want to see attacking play. I want to see guys having fun. I want to see smiles.
Right.
I want to see tricks and flicks. And I understand that Arsenal are in preseason. They're trying to build towards something. But at the same time, let's not see two-footed tackles. Let's not see anything crazy competitive here other than trying to win and trying to put on the best show possible.
And being around other top players makes them want to bring out the best. That makes them want to show out a little bit. You know, Cuauhtemoc Blanco is a guy. I bring him up in every ETR. But
it's because he's bunny hopping.
But he does the back heel. He understands the spectacle. I think a guy like Jovinko, Drogba, they understand that limelight, especially when they're on the field together and against Arsenal. I think that could bring out some of their better qualities, which to me is why I'll be excited to watch.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a fun one. Thursday night, the AT&T MLS All-Star Game, 7:30 p.m. ESPN, Unimas, UDN, RDS, and TSN2. Make sure you tune in. All the coverage, of course, right here at MLSsoccer.com. You can follow along on the app if you don't already. There's so much to talk about, so many events.
The other thing I do want to see, I know I mentioned those two guys who had hat tricks this weekend, but also some of the young guys, Keegan Rosenberry, Kyle Larin.
Keegs.
See how those guys measure up against top talent.
Larry.
You know, people especially starting to talk about some of these guys potentially, you know, being able to go play in those leagues eventually. And it's like how I think there'll be some scouts on eyes on this game as well.
Yeah, we've got some transfer news coming up in just a second. Some rumors flying around MLS. Let's start with the weekend, though. Let's start with the New York Derby. New York is red. It is done. Three games this year. One go to the blue side, NYCFC. Two go to the Red Bulls. Of course, that's 7-0 thrashing. And then they win 4-1 at Red Bull Arena. BWP with the brace here, he does is score against NYCFC. I mean, he really has been so far having a dream start to his career against their rivals. Sasha Kljestan with the PK, Tommy Mack with the goal from deep. I'm going to ask you a question about him in just a second. But there was drama, and there was, I'm not even going to call it dislike, there was real hate. Jesse Marsh said there was hate. I think Patrick Vieira afterwards, when he basically said, hey, I think Mark Geiger made a bunch of decisions in the Red Bulls' favor because Jesse's been crying all week. I mean, quote, crying all week. That's fun. That's what we want from rivalries.
Yeah.
And this thing has really started to develop into something special.
He's also wrong.
Ooh.
I mean, he is. It's not the
Patrick?
I watched. Yeah. There was no decisions that Geiger made that, to me, were, you know, maybe Ethan's late challenge, he doesn't have to give a red
in the
second yellow in that spot. But for the most part, the game was decided on the field.
Yeah.
The Red Bulls were clinical. Sasha Kljestan, from the start, I mean, he came out ready to play those first 30-40 minutes. He was that little slip ball through to BWP, who was clinical, give him credit. But Sasha's been incredible, and this game especially stood out to me. Getting in that little pocket in between the lines and being able to make that final pass, he should be in the MVP discussion.
Yeah, he definitely should be. You know, Vieira went off on Geiger there, and he got sent off the touchline at the 30-minute mark or so in that first water break. So he had a lot of things to be hacked off about in this game. But
yeah.
Marsh, quote, I thought Geiger was fantastic, which is the great, which is the great like juxtaposition between the two. Like, this was just a lot of fun. It was a great game to watch. It was a great spectacle, as you said. But Tommy Mack, is he the best, like, run-of-play striker of the ball in MLS right now? He almost had two just complete golazos. The goal he scored, look, you got to put pressure on him, but he's 35 yards out, and he just pings it, swerves it into the top corner, and he almost curled one.
Yeah.
He hit the joint. Like,
yeah, he checked.
This guy, he keeps doing it over and over and over. Somebody put pressure on him.
Yeah,
please don't, actually. Nobody put pressure on him.
Well, I like that their system, you know, they have two inverted wingers. You know, they got Jack Harrison on the right, and then he's on the left, mm-hmm. and it really gives them balance. And then when you have David Villa, you're going to create room for those guys to be, you know, they have to key on him. And then, but Tommy Mack, he could tell it was in his mind when he got the ball. He'd take a couple touches and hit it, and then he hit the heat check later.
Yeah. But the best part is, like, he saw it, and he slowed down. And sometimes you see players speed up, and they start to get excited, like, oh, I have an opportunity here. He almost slowed down, and then it's just like unleashing a cannonball.
I think he's kind of got one speed,
yeah, that's
to be
a good
fair.
Point. Yeah, that's a good
I don't
point.
Know if he slowed down much, but he never looks rushed.
That's
looks
true.
Rushed.
That's
he's
true.
Always composed. He never even gets too excited after a goal. goal. This was probably the most fired up I've seen him after he scored the goal. And you could tell the rivalry. That's the one thing I did like about this game. The first 90 seconds, I went to a bar down the street from me, and I sort of wasn't even paying attention, and these guys were already getting into it. Mm-hmm. Now you see the coaches getting into it. The biggest criticism was that this was kind of a manufactured game or rivalry by the league. You're starting to see, look, this really means something to these guys now.
It certainly does. And New York is red for the second year running. NYCFC fans looking ahead to 2017 and maybe the playoffs.
That's what I was going to say. Is the only thing is these games are all so tight that they don't play again, for the rest of the season. Now, a playoff matchup between these would be, that would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty special. Let's move on to the second game on Sunday. Sporting Kansas City laying it down.
Wait, I
want to
hit you real quick. Who's going to be, if you had to pick between the two, who is going to finish higher in the table at the end of the season?
I think they both have issues on the back line right now. I think it's a matter of who makes some moves going the rest of the way. I think Red Bull's rumored right now to have some things in the pipeline, and I have to expect New York will do something as well before the end of the window. I think those moves could really determine it. I'm going to say New York City FC. I think they start to figure it out at home. But look, if BWP gets going, watch out for the Red Bulls because they've been creating the chances. They just haven't been finishing them, I don't think. Let's talk Sporting Kansas City, Seattle. 3-0, Seattle got run off the field in Kansas City. It was really, really hot. Benny Feilhaber, I think, said afterwards that it's inhumane to play in these conditions. I mean, we both played this weekend at noon in New York City, and it was sweltering. I believe I said on the last show that heat doesn't matter. This is MLS. Deal with it. Heat matters. Heat really, really.
Yes, trust us. We know we played co-ed in Brooklyn.
Yes.
We know
now
what
I know.
Like.
This is how I know. Top-level co-ed. Sporting dominated this thing via pressure. They came out from the start and just got it done. Dom Dwyer with two goals. The answer with a beautiful, beautiful goal. Probably the best goal he'll ever score. If you don't know who the answer is, it's Jacob Peterson.
I was wondering.
Yeah, it is Jacob Peterson. He's the answer to all the questions you didn't know you've asked. Somehow, though, dude is super effective. I know Peter Vermees loves him. Just runs and runs and runs.
What a finish.
I know. The first time finish, top corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's decent.
They had a lot of chance. This could have been worse.
They were kind of trying to pile on in the end, I felt like.
Yeah.
Like, Dom Dwyer looked like he's going for a bonus.
He should
be. Seth Sinovic looked like he's like, this is my chance to get my first ever regular season
goal.
Dom's
another guy with rumors going around about
him. He is, and let's talk about that. $3 million, Ivis Galarcep says, from Olympiacos is the offer for Dom Dwyer. Would you sell?
Sure. Yeah, that's a pretty good penny. And he's done well for them. You know, I think the issue is that's the tough part to do is you have to build these clubs for the future as well as managing the present.
Right.
He's such an integral part of what they're doing. It's tough. They've got Diego behind him, but it would allow them a lot of money to be able to make moves.
It would.
So,
it would.
I don't know.
You just wonder what they have in the pipeline. It probably depends on that. Do you have guys set up? Do you have guys ready? Do you have targets?
Right.
It's a tough one because he is a big part of their marketing as well. And, of course, goal scoring is pretty important in MLS. They're trying to stay on the top of things, stay in the playoff race. They definitely did it with this one. Some other notes here. Cameron Porter arrived from Montreal in Kansas City. I'm not sure we talked about that, but he had some techers late in this game. Looks like he could be a good guy out wide for Sporting KC in that 4-3-3, 4-5-1, whatever you want to call it. Maybe even spell Dom Dwyer now and then. Siggy Schmidt, though, under pressure, continues to be under pressure. Another loss for them. They're now 10 points, I believe, out of the playoff race. It's been tough. We'll see what happens with him. I don't want to speculate on that. I think everybody in Seattle is watching that very, very closely. What I will say is that if I was Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales in Atlanta, I would be waiting to see what happens with Siggy Schmidt, because if he is out in Seattle, I would jump on that immediately without hesitation and hire him to be my head coach.
What about LAFC?
That's also a very good point.
He's got LA roots. Would definitely be another name I think would be immediate. I think he'd be getting a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if you're not looking at Siggy Schmidt, regardless of what you think about the last couple of years, playoffs in Seattle, whatever, he is an established, proven MLS coach, MLS Cup winning coach. There will be demand if he's not in Seattle.
Well, but it sounds like Seattle may make player moves first.
Yes.
Right?
It sounds like that. Ladero talking Alvaro Fernandez again. We'll see what happens there. A lot to be decided. In Seattle, let's talk hat tricks. You talked about them. Juvinko and Drogba. Who else? They're going to drop hatties in this league. Juvinko, I mean, he's like a free kick wizard. These two free kicks, incredible. And he gets the hattie on a late run later in the game. I think he broke an eight-game goal slump, which is kind of mind-boggling based on last year. But once he gets going, I think they're going to be happy. Drogba, he's going to Drogba too. He gets it, and Piatti feeds him. Piatti, I think, maybe top three player in MLS right now.
I just picked him on this week in MLS as my first half MVP.
Yeah.
I think he's got 12 goals, 5 assists. And then just I just love watching him play. Yeah. I'm just biased. But he's just a joy to watch. He's so creative on the ball. He finishes. He scores goals. He's carried the load a lot while Drogba's been gone or inefficient. Now, anybody who says this team, I know the analytics, so we can talk about that later. This team's been better without Drogba. If you saw this weekend, if you know anything, they're better with him. They need him if they need to make an actual run. But on the other side with Toronto FC, Javinko, you could see the weight come off him on that first one.
Right.
And that's how you step up on the second one. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And when they've had trouble, for me, it's when they've just given him the ball at the top of the box and just asked him to figure it out. He needs movement around him. You know, he can make it happen on his own. But this team was so much more dynamic this game. He got the ball wide on the third goal. He continues his run inside. Mm-hmm. It can't just be all on him to create goals. And he was pressing. I think this is a big step forward for them.
Huge step for him. Philly losing 5-1 in Montreal. They're third in the East, so it seems like it's a surprise, but they are 1-6-3 away. So they have not figured it out on the road. Jim Curtin said as much after this game. He said, hey, we're a pretty good home team. Still not sure what we're doing on the road. So they got to figure that one out. DC on the other side, Ben Olsen basically said, hey, when Javinko is on, it's going to be real hard. You can't let him do that to you. You can't let him have free kick opportunities around the box. You can't let him get hot. He did that in this game. Which one's better? Javinko or Drogba?
Javinko, yeah, no question.
Yeah, yeah. Were you a free kick guy back in the day? You ever bang into in a game?
I don't even think I touched a free kick. Like, not a short free kick, not play quick.
Yeah, they're like, hey, take it short, but not you, Caleb. Yeah. Not you. Somebody else touched that ball.
We'll let Brad Davis take it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Brad will get that. In a matchup of two top-of-the-table teams, Colorado and Dallas – go 1-1. This game was delayed. I don't know if you saw some of the footage, but the wind was insane before the game. That still didn't keep people from coming out. A really good crowd for the Rapids. That's what happens when you win, I think. They're starting to get crowds. They're starting to get excitement.
I think there was also a youth tournament going on there.
Was there?
I had a coach from San Francisco who was out there.
Hey, they were there. People were there, okay. And they nearly saw a smash and grab 1-0 win courtesy of Marlon Harrison, which is basically smash and grab 1-0 wins seem like the Rapids' MO at this point. Almost, except Victor Ulloa late in the game, just crushed one.
Yeah.
Just 30 yards out, Tim Howard just can't do anything about it. He got a hand on it, but not enough.
Marlon Hairston, one of my favorite players, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did that come
Jackson,
from?
Jackson, Mississippi. Him and
represent?
Justin Knapp. Yeah. I want to do a little
David
feature
Banner?
On Jackson. Yeah. And fun fact, his cousin is LaMarcus Aldridge.
Oh,
the NBA star.
That is interesting.
Yeah, athletic family.
It is a very athletic family. He rounds a keeper, puts it in, goals in two straight games for him in MLS. Victor Ulloa, a guy that has not been starting because Guerrero's been getting those starts, and Kellen Acosta, who I think we all really, really like as a player, has been playing alongside him. You don't expect this goal from him, but homegrown stepping up. I think there were four in this game for FC Dallas. They didn't get the win here, but they continue to prove that these are the two top teams in the West and maybe the league. Is LA in that conversation? I mean, we're about to turn to that spot. I mean, is it just 1-2, these two, or is LA pushed in?
No, LA's in that group for sure. I mean, you have to include them with the quality that they have. I personally think Colorado's probably the scariest team to play against. I think cold weather, altitude, at home, if they can get
in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, yeah. And with that defense. Not the prettiest game to watch always, but they it's a Pablo team. I think for a while Colorado was maybe trying to change their identity to some beautiful attacking, free-flowing like everybody says they want to. They've let Pablo do it. It reflects the type of player he was. Defend first. He could get forward and attack, and I think this team can. But it's just a hard-nosed team that defends well. And, you know, I think their wins are 1-0 games, 2-1 games. That's the type of team that I would bet on in the playoffs.
All right, we'll see what happens with them. We talked about
15
LA.
15 games unbeaten.
Yeah, that's really, really incredible, especially after last year.
Yeah.
That kind of came out of nowhere. LA with the 2-1 win in Portland. Robbie Keane gets a goal off of Gio Dos Santos' feed. Jesse Zardes follows. LA hold on. Portland really pushed in this game. The big news for the Timbers, other than the loss, of course, at home, was Nat Borchers going down with, we're still not sure what kind of injury. It did not look good. He had to be taken off on a stretcher. He was kind of holding the back of his leg, which you hope doesn't mean Achilles. But that would be a huge loss for them, especially with Liam Ridgewell continuing to suffer calf injuries and be in and out of the lineup. That's a tough go for them. But on the other side, Robbie Keane says he wants an extension. This is last year of his deal. I mean, do you have to give it to him? I mean, if there's mutual interest, you do, for sure. But LA, I have to imagine, are looking around saying, ooh, what kind of DP signings possibly can we make? But Robbie Keane's probably the best DP of all time in MLS.
Yeah, you got to find a way to make that one work. You know, I don't know how long you sign him for, guaranteed, not guaranteed. I'm not going to wade into those waters. But you find a way to keep him on the squad. What did you think of Bruce Arena's comments after the game?
I thought they were hilarious. Basically, he said he was asked about, you know, Portland had more shots, and he was asked about that and how L.A. kind of smashed and grabbed this one, not to reuse a phrase there. Mm-hmm. And he said he laughed. He said, I don't know how you want me to answer that question. And then basically called everybody who leans on analytics dummies.
He called them morons. He said some moron will write an article about us being outshot.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about soccer analytics is we have one analytic that matters most, right, and that's the score.
Yeah.
That was such like a Jay-Z moment. Yeah. I just feel like he was like flashed his rings to the crowd, dropped the mic, and
then just walked off the stage. Yeah, Bruce is great. He really is great. If you want to watch those comments, they're at MLSsoccer.com, and I suggest you tweet at Devin Pluler about them.
Wait, but I have a question because, you know, now I work for the league, and I'm around analytics, people who are looking at all these things. I see our articles online. What's your take on it? Because a part of me is like, yeah, that's pretty gangster, Bruce, and I'm fall maybe in
super
that old
gangster,
school
yeah.
side of things.
He is the OG.
But do you put stake in these analytics?
I put a good bit into like the, you know, that they can help you confirm or deny what your eye sees, and they can help lead you to places that you may not have gotten with the naked eye. It's a way to it's just an extra bullet in your chamber to prepare. Like, oh, what do these say? What do they say about where you're overloading? What do they say about your patterns of play? What do they say about scouting? It's just an extra tool. But I think as in baseball, as in basketball, everywhere else that they use them, it's still just a part. And I think soccer is so far behind those sports in our understanding and our advanced ability to actually like pull stats out and actually collect data points that are useful that it's still just – it's an inexact science. And I don't think people that use them are morons. I respect Bruce maybe more than any coach in the U.S. I don't think they're morons, but I do think there's a long, long way to go. I don't think anybody in analytics and soccer would disagree with that. There's still so much to learn. We've just scratched the surface on that side. Look, there's some other results to go over. We don't really have time, unfortunately. Some draws here. Columbus 2, Orlando 2. Columbus win the first half. Orlando win the second. If you didn't see this, Zach Steffen has come back from Germany, the U-20 goalkeeper. He signed with Crew SC, which has Union fans throwing a fit because he came through their academy at least briefly. So they're going a little bit nuts on that one. Javon Watson, this wasn't a draw, but he got a goal. When it rains, it pours for Javon. He gets another one. Sean Johnson's going to be really kicking himself for coming out on this one and whiffing. But a 1-0 win for New England against the Fire. And then draws for Houston and Vancouver and RSL and San Jose. Remember, Thursday is the big game. Tune in and watch it. Arsenal, MLS All-Stars, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, UDN, RDS, and TSN2. And we come back. Guess who we're going to talk to?
Who's that?
Ivan Gazidis, the CEO of Arsenal. You want to stick around for that one.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Arsenal fans, welcoming you back in. You know why that is. The MLS All-Star Game on Thursday, hosting Arsenal FC. You can watch that one all over the place, really, but ESPN Unimas, UDN RDS, and TSN2 are your locales. 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I teased it to start, but we are very, very happy to have Arsenal's chief executive officer and a former executive at MLS, Ivan Gazidis, on the show. He's on the line now. Ivan, how's it going?
Thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Of course, the All-Star Game is why we are talking. That game, if you've missed out, somehow you've been under the MLS rock here. July 28th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, TSN, and RDS. Arsenal against the MLS All-Stars at Avaya Stadium in San Jose. That's the reason we're talking today, Ivan. And so many clubs, European clubs, come to the U.S. in the summer. But Arsenal hasn't always been among them, not one that we see every year. Tell me why this year, why the All-Star Game, why did this opportunity make sense for your club?
Yeah, we've been trying to put this together for a while. Given my background with MLS, it's particularly exciting for me to be involved in the All-Star Game. And a couple of years ago, we had a short preseason, and we were able to make the short hop out to New York. But This year, we really worked hard with the league and in trying to secure this opportunity. And with a slightly longer preseason, we were able to put it together for two games, including the All-Star game at the Avaya Stadium in San Jose. And we're really excited to be participating at last.
How much while you're over in England are you able to pay attention to what's going on here? How often do you maybe keep in touch with the members, that the guys you worked with, the people you worked with over in MLS, including Don Garber?
Oh, I follow it very closely. I have so many great friends out in MLS in one capacity or another. So the development of the league has just been wonderful to see and to follow, and just continues to grow, and the future looks brighter and brighter.
We'll ask you about more of that in just one second, but I'm imagining you watching the game in a box at Avaya Stadium, perhaps with Don, Mark Abbott, and the like. Is there going to be a friendly wager, perhaps, Ivan? That's sort of an American tradition, maybe mayor on mayor when it comes to playoffs. But I'm curious, maybe something on the line?
You know, it's one of the restrictions we have is we're not allowed to bet on football matches. So perhaps there'll be some wagers on something else completely. But I'll sit there and believe me, there'll be plenty of pride at stake. So I don't think we'll need money to exacerbate the issue.
Let's reminisce a little bit. You were here since 94. You were a member of creating this league, one of the original folks involved. Take me back to previous All-Star games. I mean, this is a tradition that doesn't happen really in Europe and England. What's your favorite memory? What do you remember from the good old days, perhaps?
Well, you know, I remember the old All-Star format. You know, our first game was in Giant Stadium, where we played an MLS All-Star team against a World All-Star team, and Tab Ramos scored a great goal, and it was an incredible event. And but the format has developed since then, and now you know, MLS is using this format where it plays against teams from around the world. And I think it's fantastic because it's a unique opportunity that exists in soccer to test yourself against some of the world's best. And so I love the format. I love the development of it. Great memories all along the way. And I have to say, the MLS team has always done very, very well in these matchups.
And, of course, the All-Star Game is a celebration of MLS as a league, really. And we've kind of alluded to it, but some people may not know it. Back in 94, you jumped on board and helped build this thing. Take me back to that time in your life. What did that opportunity mean to you? How did you get involved in MLS? How were you brought in?
Well, it was an unbelievable opportunity for me. Mark Abbott, who is now the president of Major League Soccer and deputy commissioner, was a friend of mine and was really involved with a guy called Alan Rothenberg with the inception of the league. And Mark asked me whether I'd be interested in helping out with that. And I was, I'm not very bright, but I was smart enough to know a great opportunity when I heard one. So I jumped, and within 2 weeks had moved from London to Los Angeles, and Mark and I occupied a very small space in a corridor in the 1994 World Cup offices, along with a small group of people who were involved in trying to put together this thing that we called Major League Soccer.
Where do you start? I mean, you're starting from scratch, basically. I mean, what are you guys putting down on? It might not have been whiteboards in that day, but how did you begin the process? What did you plot out? Do you think back and say, boy, what were we thinking about this, or we were inspired when we thought of that?
You know, really looking back on it now with the benefit of all of the time that has passed since then, the 20 years of MLS, I think had we fully appreciated the magnitude of what we were trying to do and how this thing would develop and what it would become, I think we would have been very intimidated by the size of the challenge. You know, we had one major advantage, which was that we were starting with a blank sheet of paper. And, you know, soccer had been through many iterations in the United States, and at each stage really had not been able to, a domestic league had not been able to succeed, certainly at the level that fans' expectations would want it to. And our biggest success was getting the most incredible group of owners together to buy into a business plan, which really was a long-term plan for the growth of the game, required a significant financial commitment on their part, but also a real emotional commitment. And the biggest success, looking back on it, that we had, and the reason that MLS has developed the way that it has, is in my view, the strength of the ownership group.
If we were talking to Ivan in 1994, and we said in 22 years, what is Major League Soccer going to look like compared to what it looks like right now, what do you think you would have said?
I would have had no idea how the game has grown. You know, we believed that there would be demographic changes in the United States that that would push soccer forward. But I would not have believed that we would have been able to see the kind of commitment we've had from ownership in building new stadiums specifically for the game. I would not have believed the way that I mean, remember, 1994 is before the internet, so I would not have believed the way that the global culture of soccer would have connected with an American audience, and that you know, we would see the kind of atmosphere that you have in MLS stadiums, which is the equivalent to stadiums anywhere you want to go in the world. And you know, this connection, this ease of connection, the access that young people in particular have to watching the best players and getting information about the game. Remember, back in 94, if you were a 12-year-old playing soccer, you were dependent on a 55-year-old sports editor for the information that you read. You weren't able to watch a player like Cristiano Ronaldo because there was no broadcast avenue. And your only, you know, your only access was through linear broadcast and through the major channels. So, you know, now we have so much more distribution of the game. If you are a 12-year-old today, you can get access to any game you want to watch. You can get access to any information you want to watch. There are no barriers. And that has really activated, in my view, the interest in soccer in the States and the connection that people feel to the world's game. And that's been fantastic, I think, for clubs like Arsenal and the Premier League, which are growing in the States. But I think it's also been fantastic for Major League Soccer because Major League Soccer is now part of the global conversation.
Of course, you joined Arsenal at the beginning of 2009. At that time, Seattle was just coming into the league, and the league had hit 15 teams after being at 10 during, you know, that 2002 to 2004 time. Now we're talking 24 teams, and Don Garber says that he'd like the league to be one of the world's best by 2022. I mean, what do you make of that goal setting and the ambition that Don and the rest of the executives and the teams and everyone involved in this league are pushing towards, and, of course, the fans who are pushing it all that way?
You know, I think it's fantastic that the league is setting high goals for itself. I think it should do that. I think it has one of the strongest ownership groups in sports with the capability to drive towards that goal. I think we have you've got a fan base in the United States that is deeply connected and engaged and passionate about the game. So I think that there are a lot of things in place in the U.S. And again, I left in 2009. Perhaps it's coincidental, but you know, the way the league has developed since even in the short space of time that I've been over here has been incredible to see. I mean, the passion of the fans. You mentioned Seattle. You know, just seeing the size of the audiences, I think Major League Soccer averaging over 21,000 fans a game now, and that makes it the seventh biggest league in the world today. So when Don talks about the goal of becoming one of the world's best leagues, Major League Soccer is already well on the path to achieving that goal.
What do you use though in that conversation as the standard? Because you work in the Premier League, of course, and you work on different boards as well throughout UEFA and the FA. So you know what the top leagues look like. What is it, a financial situation? Is it play on the field purely? How do you judge a league being the top league?
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, there are lots of different prisms that you can look at it through. I think, you know, how many fans follow, are interested and engaged in the league, are passionate about the league, obviously, is a critical piece of that. And another critical piece is the standard of play. And I think, you know, MLS is focused. I think MLS has all the pieces, the strength of the ownership, the quality of the stadiums, the engagement of the fans. All of these things are abundantly in place in the United States. I think the next phase of growth for MLS has to be the focus on what happens on the field and how they develop that, so that you know, people can know that they're watching the best soccer in the world. And that's challenging. You know, there's no question about that. There's more and more competition for the best players in the world. But what we're seeing with MLS is, I think, two different things. One is some top-class players, and not just players at the end of their careers, choosing MLS. But I think underneath that, and maybe more importantly, is going to be the development of American players. There are so many kids playing the game across the United States, and in the end, it's the development of domestic talent that provides the platform for everything else. So MLS needs to continue as it has been, focusing on its academy system and on developing young players to provide the pipeline of talent that it's going to need as it goes through expansion, because so critical for MLS in the next phase of its development is what happens on the field.
Certainly we're all paying a lot of attention to that, and paying attention to what's going on the field in England as well. A lot of Arsenal fans here in the U.S. Let's turn to your current duties with the club. I'm going to combine this a little bit. What's on your plate? Give us an idea of what it's really like to be the chief executive officer of Arsenal. And then perhaps what did you learn at MLS that helps you in that role? What do you draw on day to day that you developed perhaps while you're in the U.S.?
Look, you know, one of the things about when you come to a club like Arsenal is to appreciate the scale of the responsibility that you have. It's not just a football club. It's really a social, cultural institution. It represents a community of people that are not just based here in Islington or in London or even in the United Kingdom. It's a worldwide audience. And the people that follow this club are deeply, deeply connected with the club's values. And it's an incredible group right across the world. And when we just give you some sense of the scale, we have 36 million Facebook followers, closing in on 8 million following us on Twitter. The Yankees, by comparison, and the Yankees are a wonderful and global brand, a fantastic institution in their own right, but they have 8.5 million on Facebook. So that's a tiny fraction, 1.7 million on Twitter. So it just gives you a sense of the scale of the Premier League and Arsenal's place within it. So, you know, we are representing a set of values in the way we run our club, the way we play football, the way we conduct ourselves, that are shared by this global community. And so you're facing in taking on that responsibility, you're facing in a lot of different areas. You know, we are at the moment investing in youth, as we always have. One of the pillars of our development is youth development, in much the same way as I was describing for MLS, Arsenal's success. The base of the pyramid is the players that we can develop ourselves, and that's always been a huge focus of ours. And so we're investing millions and millions of pounds into our facilities here and into the support that we give to the young players that come into our club. And so during the summer, you know, there's an awful lot going on in that area. We also do a massive amount of work in terms of community. You know, community is at the heart of our club. So we've touched 1.3 million people locally here in Islington, but we also, not just the local projects that we have, we're involved all around the world. Recently, we opened two football pitches at refugee camps in Iraq. We've done the same in Syria. We've been involved in that effort over the last 5 or 6 years. We have projects in Beijing, in China, in Indonesia, Jakarta, disaster appeals all around the world with our partnership with Save the Children. So we're facing in so many different ways representing a set of values that the club holds dear, and the people that love our club hold dear. And then, of course, you have the football side, which is intensely competitive and always driving forward in all the areas around that. And at this time of year, people are particularly focused on the transfer market. But actually, the success of a club is built on so many different things that lie underneath the news agenda around transfers of players. And so there's a tremendous amount of work that's going on at this time of year on all of those things. And of course, next week I'll be flying out to California and meeting some old friends. And that's also not just a goodwill visit. It's also a very serious part of our preseason, where our players are preparing for what's going to be a really testing start to the season. We open against Liverpool, that's going to be we've got to go in all guns blazing.
You mentioned that massive fan base across the world, and there's been some frustration without the championships in the Premier League and Champions League over the last few years, but you started out working in a league and now you work for a club. How does the need to win change your role and change how you work? And, you know, maybe what's the differences between working for a league and working for a club?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, it's a very different environment. When you're working for the league, you are always focused on long-term growth, and you can watch the games as a neutral without that passionate emotional ups and downs day to day. And when you go to a club, you are experiencing the emotions that the fans are experiencing, you know, dramatic ups and downs based on whether the ball hits the post and goes in and or hits the post and comes out, and dramatic conclusions and emotions follow from those events. I think though, the one thing that is important is that you, and in the same way as you do with the league, that you, particularly in my position as chief executive, that you focus on the long-term growth of the club, the progress that the club is making. Because if you get caught up too much in the day-to-day ups and downs, you'll end up making some bad decisions. And bad decisions have no place in this game. It's so competitive that if you make many of those, the wheels come off the wagon quite quickly. And you can look at many, many examples of football clubs where, decisions have been made for the short term or based on an emotional environment that have ended up backfiring. So for us at the club, we're focused very much on making sure that we're progressing in what is an increasingly competitive environment, and we're in a really good place as a club. You know, everywhere, in all aspects of what we're doing, we're making dramatic progress. And I think ultimately, of course, what we all want is to see all of that progress reflected on the pitch. And that's a very, very strong directive from our owner, through our board, through me, and certainly with our manager. We want more. The long-term journey that the club is on is to establish itself as one of the leading clubs, but one of the handful of leading clubs in the world of football. Now, that isn't easy to say, many clubs might espouse that goal, but we are doing that year on year, very, very consistent and firm in our club philosophy. You know, we are devoted to the club. We do think long term about it. Very, very engaged with not just what we do, but how we do it. We believe in youth. We believe in progressive, attractive football. We believe in constant development, never resting on laurels. And also, we believe and are resistant to some very dramatic crosswinds that come and try to blow you off course. And I think, you know, there is a tremendous strength in this club in terms of the way that we operate. I know that there's a huge admiration for the club all around the world that I sense because of the values that we hold dear. It's those values, they don't inhibit us from being successful. They're the values that will enable us to be successful. And we are seeing progress. There's no question in my mind that the squad that we have is stronger than it was 5 years ago in a very, very competitive marketplace. There's no question in my mind we're making progress as a club. We've won the FA Cup twice in the last 3 years. That's a record-breaking FA Cup run for us. And also, you know, I know we fell short and we're all disappointed in that last season, but our last three league finishes have been forward, third, and second. So we're moving in the right direction. We want to take it very, very focused on taking it one step further this upcoming season.
You mentioned how much more goes on at a club rather than just the transfers and the rumors, but we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you the questions right now around bringing in potentially a new striker and new signings. The season coming up, an exciting season, I think, for Arsenal as they head into preseason. Is there any updates or any ideas of what's coming and what fans can expect?
Well, we've been really consistent and disciplined over the last 3 or 4 years in being very selective about the players that we bring in and not making too many compromises along the way. And that has meant both developing young players. We've got some fantastic young talent that have come through, like Hector Bellerin or Francis Coquelin. Alex Iwobi broke it into the first team this year. These are tremendous young players, and we've got a number of young players that we feel very strongly about behind them. But it also has involved spending big money at times on talented players that we believe, where we believe they add real value, players like Mesut Ozil or Alexis Sanchez, or this season, Granit Xhaka. But again, we don't sign players in response to public pressure. We sign players because we believe they will progress us as a club, and we're really disciplined about that. We have to be. We don't have the financial resources of some of the other clubs, and if we went out and just tried to compete only on the basis of spending more than others in transfer windows, that wouldn't be a successful strategy for us. So we have to be very disciplined about staying true to our values, staying true to the foundations of the club, and making sure we make smart decisions. So looking ahead in this transfer window, we're going to retain that discipline. We will certainly add players if we think they add, and if our manager thinks they add value to our squad, and we're actively in the market as every other club, but we won't do it if we don't think if we don't see the value that's added to our squad, and that's the reason why our squad has developed over the last few years. That's the reason that it's stronger today than it was 5 years ago. And I think anybody paying attention to what we've actually done with our squad would recognize that philosophy and that approach has given us a squad that is capable of competing to win the Premier League, and we're very hopeful about the direction of travel.
As always, all eyes on Arsenal. A big season ahead for them, a big game ahead as preseason ramps up for the club. Headed to San Jose, the All-Star game, taking on the MLS All-Stars at Avaya Stadium, July 28th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Unimas, TSNRDS, if you want to watch that one. Ivan Gazidis, our guest. Thank you so much, Ivan, for joining us. Good luck with the season ahead. Good luck with everything. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it, and very much looking forward to the game.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Meantime, Drizzy over there trying to make it dance to this. Yeah, I make it dance to this. Roll big body, wide body.
Back now, Extra Time Radio. Kaylin Carr, Andrew Wiebe from San Pedro Public Market in San Jose. Remember the AT&T MLS All-Star Game, Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, UDN, RDS, and TSN. I can say that in my sleep at this point. You can follow at MLSsoccer.com. We have literally no time here. We talked so much about MLS and, you know, Ivan Gazidis, you can't push him off the podcast. So the one email we're going to go to here, the one we're going to go to is from Adam Capen, who wants to know if there should be a skills competition on Wednesday. Maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, get the players out there, have them take free kicks, have them do like a dribbling competition. NBA used to do some stuff like this. NHL did. How do you feel about that?
Nah, not really.
No? You're not feeling it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Not really.
No? Not feeling it. Okay.
Let him do it in the game, yeah.
Yeah, there's not. I couldn't even like couldn't convince you to play horse with free kicks. Have Kaká and Jovinko and Drogba out there just aiming for corners.
I don't see that happening a lot in real life. Mm. I think that's like a 3-point contest or 21. That's something that's kind of a part of the
right.
culture. I don't really see that as part of.
Yeah, after training, you're not sitting out there just trying to hit.
I'm not. Yeah. We already covered that.
All right. Well, okay. Look, we'll ask Brad Davis next time we have him on the show.
I'm doing extra fitness just trying to run back on defense for Brad.
Right. Hey, we need you to run. Hey, why aren't you running? More sprints, please. Hey, that's all we have here. Big thanks to Kalen, of course, as always. Big thanks to Ivan Gazidis, the CEO of Arsenal. Remember, that game is on Thursday. Tune in. Coverage at MLSsoccer.com. We'll be with you afterwards. See you then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.